3. The barge Benares entered the river port of Naiad an hour before sunset. Crew and pilgrims pressed to the rail to stare at smoldering embers of what once had been a city of 20,000 people. Little remained. The famous riverfront inn, built in the days of Sad King Billy, had burned to the foundations. Its charred docks, piers, and screened balconies now collapsed into the shallows of the Hooghly. The custom house was a burned-out shell. The airship terminal on the north end of town survived only as a blackened hulk, its mooring tower reduced to a spire of charcoal. There was no sign whatsoever of the small riverfront shrike temple. Worst of all, from the pilgrims' point of view, was the destruction of the Naiad River Station. The harness dock lay burned and sagging, the manta holding pens open to the river.
"God damn it!"
said Martin Silenus.
"Who did it?" asked Father Hoyt. "The shrike?"
"More likely the SDF," said the consul, "although they may have been fighting the shrike."
"I can't believe this,"
snapped Braun Lamia. She turned to A. Bettick, who had just joined them on the rear deck.
"Didn't you know this had happened?"
"No,"
said the android.
"There has been no contact with any point north of the locks for more than a week."
"Why the hell not? Even if this godforsaken world doesn't have a datasphere, don't you have a radio?"
A. Bettick smiled slightly.
"Yes, M. Lamia, there is radio. But the commsats are down. The microwave repeater stations at the Kala locks were destroyed, and we have no access to shortwave."
"What about the mantas?"
asked Kassad.
"Can we press on to the edge with the ones we have?"
Bettick frowned.
"We will have to, Colonel. But it is a crime. The two in harness will not recover from such a pull. With fresh mantas, we would have put into edge before dawn. With these two..."
The android shrugged.
"With luck, if the beasts survive, we will arrive by early afternoon."
"The wind wagon will still be there, will it not?"
asked Het Mastin.
"We must assume so,"
said A. Bettick.
"If you will excuse me, I will see to feeding the poor beasts we have. We should be underway again within the hour."
They saw no one in or near the ruins of Naiad. No rivercraft made their appearance above the city. An hour's pull northeast of the town, they entered the region where the forests and farms of the lower Hooghly gave way to the undulating orange prairie south of the Sea of Grass. Occasionally, the consul would see the mud towers of architect ants, some of their serrated structures near the river reaching almost 10 meters in height. There was no sign of intact human habitation. The ferry at Betty's Ford was totally gone, with not even a tow rope or warming shack left to show where it had stood for almost 2 centuries. The River Runners Inn at Cave Point was dark and silent. A. Bettick and other crew members hallooed, but there was no response from the black cave mouth. Sunset brought a sensuous stillness over the river, soon broken by a chorus of insect noises and nightbird calls. For a while, the surface of the Hooghly became a mirror of the gray-green disk of twilight sky, disturbed only by the leap of dusk-feeding fish and the wake of the laboring mantas. As true darkness fell, innumerable prairie gossamers, much paler than their forest cousins, but also of greater wingspan, luminescent shades the size of small children, danced in the vales and valleys of the gently rolling hills. By the time the constellations emerged and the meteor trails began scarring the night sky, a brilliant display this far from all man-made light, the lanterns had been lit and dinner set out on the aft deck. The shrike pilgrims were subdued, as if still contemplating Colonel Kassad's grim and confusing tale. The consul had been drinking steadily since before midday, and now he felt the pleasant displacement from reality, from the pain of memory, which allowed him to get through each day and night. Now he asked, his voice as careful and unslurred as only a true alcoholic's can be. Whose turn it was to tell a tale?
Mine,
said Martin Silenus. The poet also had been drinking steadily since early in the day. His voice was as carefully controlled as the consul's, but redness on his sharp cheeks and an almost manic brightness of eye gave the old poet away.
At least I drew number three.
He held up his slip of paper.
If you still want to hear the fucking thing.
Brawn Lamia lifted her glass of wine, scowled, and set it down.
Perhaps we should talk about what we have learned from the first two stories and how it might relate to our current situation.
Not yet,
said Colonel Cassad.
We don't have enough information.
Let M. Silenus speak,
said Saul Weintraub.
Then we can begin discussing what we have heard.
I agree, said Lennar Hoyt.
Het Mastin and the consul nodded.
Agreed. I'll tell my story. Just let me finish my fucking glass of wine.